Welcome to the Chirpin' Birds podcast. The Eagles narrowly escaped the Commanders with a win 34-31 in overtime. They improved to 4-0. Commanders fall to 2-2 at the time. We're recording Friday morning after their 40-20 loss to the Bears. So the Commanders are now 3-2. We'll get into the game. You know, Jalen Hurts played very well. The defense did not play as well. And Jake Elliott, as always, rock solid and gets another NFC Special Teams Player of the Week honor. We'll get into the upcoming game out here on the West Coast against the Rams before we get started. Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Can't help but say how excited I am, not just for this game, but also the Phillies. They advance to the next round of the playoffs, being the Marlins, sweeping, heading down to Atlanta tomorrow. Red October is here. Of course, the Eagles are undefeated. I remember around this time last year, this is when us as fans kind of get spoiled with the amount of successful teams that are playing. But I will admit, haven't felt it yet, but like I don't think I'm ready for like the amount of turmoil and stress and just like the energy getting sucked out of us that makes, like, you know, rooting for these teams so fun. But it's coming. But yeah, the Commanders game, I mean, that could have been a real mess there. They got themselves into a tricky situation there at the end. They're fortunate that Ron Rivera made an awful decision to take that into overtime. I can't fathom how many coaches make that same decision on the road, no less. Pretty crazy.
And his excuse for it, wasn't it like his guys were tired or something?
Yeah, I mean, it's just inexplicable. And I do wonder, even coming into this year, it felt like he was kind of on borrowed time. Like, there's no way Rivera's going to be coaching after this year, even if they somehow do sneak in to the playoffs. But now, yeah, they lose in pretty bad fashion last night. I think there was like a scent of a comeback, but that was quickly stomped out. Now they fall to 2-3. The Giants also on the wrong side of 500. I do wonder if like those two teams kind of spiral out of control, if things go sideways and their coaches are suddenly, I suppose Rivera's not like on the hot seat so much as like his seat is slowly being pulled out from under him naturally. But I'm curious what happens with Dable if things continue to look ugly in New York. But Eagles haven't played the Giants yet. Still got one more for the Commanders. I do wonder if those games later in this season end up looking a little bit less competitive than we may have thought. However, the Commanders really came to play last Sunday against the Eagles. I was a little perplexed by that. I know that it is always said that division games are always a little weird because either your rivals, B, these teams have seen a lot of each other. I know that the rosters change year to year, but not too much. What was your big takeaway of the overtime victory, or some of them, I suppose?
Well, you were the one that said Sam Howell might be good, so that was a bit of my takeaway from the game at the time.
And he didn't look bad last night either.
Well, yeah, I guess the first half,
but like, if you look at what he was doing, he didn't look too bad.
Yeah, I haven't looked at a stat line, but Yeah, I think he's probably Heinicke level. Like Heinicke had had those types of performances. It's only been five games. So over the course of the season, you know, I feel like that's similar to the Jalen Hurts, you know, way to look at Jalen Hurts last year through the first few games. Like, oh, is he going to be this good for the whole season, that kind of thing? Not that Howell's playing at that level, but I think the Commanders kind of like I think it's kind of like coaching and culture. Like they've shown that they can play tough, and they've played really well against the Eagles. Like Jalen Hurts had a pretty good performance. He did miss some throws, but he made the throws that he's being paid to make at crucial times, and fitting the ball into tight windows. And the Commanders defense played really tight. And you know, Cam Jurgens did get hurt, but the Eagles O-line, you know, they still ran for a decent amount. And I just think the Commanders defense, you know, is a solid unit, and they've been pretty solid for the last few seasons. And I think it kind of comes down to coaching, because that good performance against the Eagles was sort of like the middle of the sandwich of blowout losses. I mean, I know the Bears started to let them get back in it for a time, but they had two pretty bad losses outside of the Eagles game. So I think that's probably more coaching and culture than anything else. Like they didn't come ready to play against, you know, the Bills and the Bears, and they did come ready to play in Philly. So whether you want to chalk that up to division, you know, flukiness or not, I think that the Commanders are playing better than the Giants. Like I feel like the Giants put together this kind of scrappy performances for stretches during games, but not for full games. And I don't know. It's tough. The Eagles and the Cowboys are so far and away better teams than the Giants and the Commanders. So as far as comparing them within the division, yeah, they're not very good. But I think the Commanders have a chance to, like, any given Sunday, any good team, where the Giants, I don't think they have that ability. So from that perspective, I feel like, you know, they're better than the Giants, but the Giants seem to be like a dumpster fire this year. The stat that's been going around social media is that Jake Elliott has more points than the Giants do the whole season. So that's nice. That's a fun stat.
Yeah. Speaking of Hurts, Sirianni said he thought this was the best game of the season for him so far. I think that would be hard to disagree with. He went 25 of 37 for 319, two touchdowns, no turnovers. So a relatively clean game for him, which was nice to see. AJ Brown, he had a like vintage performance, 9 catches, 175 yards and two touchdowns. He was mostly covered by rookie Emmanuel Forbes, who very undersized, but like seems very competitive and feisty. I think this was a bit of a baptism in the NFL type game for him. It's pretty crazy that they decided to put him on Brown. I think that was I didn't even think they would consider that matchup, just with how much of a mismatch it is in talent, experience, and then physical size. And even AJ Brown was talking about, like, he really enjoyed going against him because Forbes is coming in like very very competitive, was like, you could see those two mixing it up throughout the game. So that was nice to see. Although it didn't end up being that competitive. Devontae Smith, he had a decent game as well. He had a big contested catch down the field when the Eagles offense was a little bit stuck in the mud. He goes 7 for 78. So the passing offense was slowly coming back. Still not much in the neighborhood of Dallas Goedert. He hasn't cracked 100 yards on the season, which is pretty surprising. So something to keep an eye on. I do think I have noticed like they're trying to get him involved in the game. It's not like he's not getting the targets or the catches. It's just his catches and right where he catches them. Like there hasn't been much open field. He hasn't like found the seam in the middle of the field. We haven't seen the tight end screen, so that's something to keep an eye on. One of the stats I thought was pretty telling was looking at the two respective defenses and their third down conversions. So I don't know if you've seen the stat from last Sunday. The Eagles went 4 for 12, which is not good. Now, they did have a good amount of explosive plays, so they didn't find themselves in too many third down situations. The Commanders, on the other hand, they went 8 for 17, so nearly 50%. And it sure felt like it was higher throughout the game. The Eagles defense could not get off the field on third down, and it seemed like the Commanders offense was like quite comfortable in like third and medium. So what's your take on it's early here, and this is like probably the first game that you would feel a little concerned about Sean Desai's defense. But like, how are you feeling in regards to what Sam Howell and the Commanders were able to do as far as racking up 258 passing yards and 107 rushing yards on the day? So 356 total yards.
Yeah, it's definitely giving me visions of last year a bit. To your point with like the third downs and you know, giving up those plays, it's interesting. If you look at the stats of the whole game, the Eagles did outgain the Commanders, but the Commanders had better third down percentage. They were both 2 for 2 on fourth down. The Commanders ran more plays. They had less penalties and more time of possession, and they still, you know, lost. I mean, it was an even game. Obviously, it went to overtime. It was a one-score game. But as far as the defense goes, and that's a concern for this upcoming Rams game with the coverage, is this soft coverage, which seems to be, I think it was very frustrating last year throughout the year until like later in the season where you just were so beat into submission on this is what Gannon's running. Yeah. That it's, you just like kind of accepted it.
On some of those, like it could be like 3rd and 7 and it's like, oh, just throw the ball. Like he could get it right there. Like it's an uncompetitive down. I'm like, what?
Right.
Like they're not going downfield here. They only need that many yards. You shouldn't give it. Like, I know that like certain plays, those could be, you know, baiting them into the throw, and potentially that could be an interception. It's just we haven't seen that.
Yeah,
like it feels like 80% of the time it's a completion.
the soft coverage is definitely like concerning, but because of last year, I feel like it's an organizational philosophy on defense. During the interview process, I remember part of it was like, you know, they're hiring Sean Desai, but they're not hiring him for like his defensive prowess. They're hiring him because he is a smart coach that is willing to scheme within like Nick, what Nick wants to do on defense. So I do think that it's an organizational philosophy to play this prevent, or I don't know that it's prevent, but like off coverage to keep everything in front of you. Like, I don't have the stats on, you know, explosive plays against numbers. I assume that they're in the top 10, if not the top 5, on not giving up explosive plays. You know, in recent memory, I can't really remember a time where someone was beat so bad that, you know, for a touchdown or something like that. Like, we've done that to other teams far more than they've done it to us. So from that perspective, I do think that they're successful in that. The problem is, you know, you're giving up those intermediate passes, and then it becomes a death by a thousand cuts, and the games get tight when you're banking on the opposing offense not converting over the course of a long drive. Like, if you're giving up 3rd and 7 and playing at the sticks, and there's a 6-yard pass to someone, and they, you know, reach out and easily get the third down there, and they do that, you know, 5 or 6 times and are going 10 yards at a time, like, if your defense doesn't get a stop, obviously it's harder to convert third downs the more third downs you have on a drive. Like, it's easier to get big chunk plays and have, you know, three third down potential opportunities than 6 or 7. But if you're giving up those 6 or 7 third downs, then your defense is exhausted. And that, depending how early in the game it is, affects your defense through the course of the game. So you're sort of setting, it's a risk reward. Like, you're making the other team convert on third downs, you know, 8 for 17, that's 5 more third down opportunities than the Eagles had with 12. Now, that could be because they converted more third downs, but I just think it's a risk reward, and that's their philosophy, because they're hoping that the defense will either break up a pass on third down, or the opposing offense will not, you know, convert over the course of a long drive. The Commanders were able to convert a number of first downs on third down and, you know, extended drives, and that's where you get into trouble. So when that's happening, that's when the sirens go off, like, oh, this is going to be a tough day for the defense.
Yeah. I'll admit, maybe there's sound reasoning. I'm sure there's more sound reasoning behind those decisions than we're willing to dissect or even know about. But my gripe with it is, fine, do that on 1st and 2nd down. See what you can get them on 3rd down. When it's 3rd and medium, it's almost a guarantee that they're going to be passing. That is the circumstance where there should be way less cushion, because they're most likely not going downfield on 3rd down. Like, they're trying to get the next set of downs. It's in those situations where it's like 3rd and 7, it's like, well, if it's just a quick pass, he's got it.
So, yeah, I don't know.
I feel like we saw that like 4 or 5 times where it's just like, all right, just let them walk down the field and start the next set. Like, it doesn't feel like some of those snaps are like competitive, given how far back the cornerbacks are playing. And I will say, it's fair to mention Eagles, they were experimenting with Bradbury in the slot, Josh Strobe on the boundary, and they also didn't have Evans, their starting safety. So they had Edmonds. So they were down 2 starters. This does feel like a natural place to talk about the new signing the Eagles made during the week. They signed cornerback Bradley Roby to the practice squad. He's almost certainly going to be elevated the next 2 weeks and eventually make it to the 53. Now he's a 31-year-old veteran. Most recently played with the Saints, played with the Saints last year, played with the Saints in camp. So he's not really off the street. He was with the team quite recently. He's got inside out versatility, but he'll definitely slot in to that slot spot. And that will send Bradberry out to where he's best on the outside. So for now, I think he is the solution until he's not, but overall, like, I think that's a pretty good answer for the time being. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought it was a good signing. I think that if he doesn't work out, they need to keep doing stuff like that.
Right. It's like the slot and punter just
yeah. Well, punter,
it's an ongoing tryout.
Yeah, punter, I feel like they're less proactive with, but
it feels like it's a bit of fan service, literally.
Right. So
Pass. Here's a new one. What do you think?
You know, I think Job showed, potential. I think he's that a good like fourth corner, sort of like what Zach McPherson has been the last few years. Now, if Zach McPherson didn't get hurt, I can't really speak to his development. Obviously camp is camp and preseason and all that, but it would have been interesting to see McPherson out there, and then you have Joe behind him to see what you're in the guys in the building have. But this is a veteran guy. I think there were some player quotes that were pretty positive. Forget exactly from who, but it's been a positive signing as far as reaction goes from my experience. So I think it's a solid signing. Hopefully he still has left in the tank, and we'll see. I mean, if he doesn't work out, I would expect more signings like that. I as much as it's exciting to hope for a trade, like I can't really imagine, unless it's week in, week out issues, that Howie will make a substantial trade with, I would imagine draft picks involved. So and I don't even know who would be available. Like, you probably have to wait till closer. Do you know when the deadline is?
I think it's around Halloween.
Like, sure. So you would have to wait a little longer to see which teams are, a little far out of it that would be willing to give up anyone with significant talent. So I think it's a good signing. We'll see how it goes, and it'll be a big test this weekend, because the Rams have one of the best passing offenses in the league so far. And I guess do you have anything else on the Commanders game?
A few more nuggets here. What a game for Nicholas Morrow. The linebackers, I guess, overall have, like, the past two games haven't looked like the weakness we thought they were coming into the year.
Yeah, him and Cunningham have been doing really well. This was another thing with the off coverage. I feel like Desai does bring pressure more from that mm-hmm. linebacker spot, and maybe I can't say that it's for sure that Morrow's just good at, pass rushing or whatever, because I would assume the Kobe Dean would be having just as much success if he was in there. Like, that was kind of where he flashed the most in preseason and in the few snaps he took last year. So I do see that a bit more, and I have, excuse me, I haven't been as, locked in watching the game to know whether they've been bringing him on third down or earlier, but I situational, probably more obvious passing downs that's called, but that I think is different from Gannon from last year. So that could be a little more of Desai's input, that he likes to bring extra pressure a bit more. And, you know, to your point, they have been a strong unit, the linebackers, but if it's a unit that you're not going to invest in, you may as well bring an extra rusher.
Exactly.
So
yeah, if these aren't like coverage darlings, we might as well throw them and create more chaos. So I agree with that. That's
been the biggest difference between defense last year and defense this year. But I do think that off coverage philosophy is still a cultural, you know, organizational thing, not a Gannon versus Desai thing.
Right. So Morrow, coming off a week in which he had a safety, follows it up with a 3-sack game. If you were just box score watching, you would think like, let's get Morrow the extension while we can. But you know, I mean, it's nice to see. I don't think many people. Well, I mean, he didn't make the initial roster, so like he is kind of flashing almost in a silly way. But I also do think like not to take those away from him, but I do think they're like the circumstance of the defense, and you know, he's like one of those was probably just a product of downfield coverage. So it's not like he's doing his job, but I don't think
the D line certainly helps him as well.
He's not like he's not on Pro Bowl watch or anything. But I'd love to see more of it. And then just the two others, Reddick had his first sack of the year. We saw the thumbs down. That was fun. Sweat also had a sack. Nice to see his consistent production. And we talked about the overtime field goal winner from Elliott, 54. Looked like it could have been good from like nearly 70. He's just been super reliable. It's kind of unfortunate, like when your kicker is getting this much love, it's not awesome to see, because that means you're not being your most successful in the red zone. So he had 4 field goals on the day. You probably don't want to see him have that many, but you know when he's out there that he's good for those kicks. So it is nice to have that reliable weapon in Elliott. The last thing, I feel like we can't just like let this game go without talking about how many like questionable calls and outcomes there were. So aside from Rivera not going for it, which I think is like the most, like obviously that's not like a ref one or like a weird bounce, it's just like a bad decision. I do think there were some questionable decisions, but between outcomes, weird penalties and decisions, what were some of the ones that got you angry or confused?
Well,
I feel like we could draft them, but
yeah, I'll pick a few. two come to mind, one in the Eagles' favor, one against the Eagles. The one against the Eagles is that Darius Slay defensive holding or whatever they called, where
I think it was PI.
PI, yeah, that was basically nothing. The broadcaster said it was nothing. It was like a phantom call. I don't know that it ended up hurting them too bad. I think the Commanders ended up punting on that drive anyway, but that was just like an egregious drive sustainer.
They showed the replay and was like, no, it had to be on like the next or the previous snap, because this is nothing.
And then in the Eagles' favor was the McLaurin coming down on Reed Blankenship's arm. I think it was just very lucky that they called him out of bounds there. Like,
it's one of those calls.
It wouldn't have been overturned either way, and that was very fortunate. That, you know, they ended up scoring the touchdown to tie the game anyways. But
well, that was,
you know, overtime. A drive that was overtime.
Ultimately, they had to punt because of that call.
Right.
So.
Right. So, you know, that was fortunate. That was an overtime. So who's to say if they would have scored the touchdown on that drive or not, but that was very fortunate.
Yeah. I feel like I could do like a whole episode on this, but in the first drive, like the Commanders just got bailed out like every which way as far as penalties, the dropped interception or the dropped tipped pass in the end zone by Edmonds, like the easiest of easy interceptions. It just like, I don't, it's just that one. I was like, dude.
Yeah. At first I was like, did that get the other deflected? Team?
How does that hit the ground?
Yeah. It was the most uncoordinated, like defensive back move I've ever seen.
Yeah. And then I forget if it was the next play or if it was the next Commander's drive, but I think it was Brian Robinson got stripped of the ball. It could have been Gibson. I forget which running back it was, but they get stripped at the goal line. McLaurin falls on the ball. You know, that's always like a coin flip. I felt like every coin flip was going the Commander's way. And then the other one was the offsides penalty on Dickerson on like the first brotherly shove play of the day, 3rd and 1. They get Eagles get penalized for that, even though
they were touching the ball.
Yeah, what was that, Daron Payne or Jonathan Allen? I forget which, but like, you know, it looked pretty clear that both teams were offsides. It should have been offsetting, but the Eagles had to punt there. Look, they got the first down. It's just it was blown dead for that penalty, so they had to punt. So, you know, Eagles robbed of that possession. There's a laundry list of more. I really think the Eagles got the short end of the stick on the majority of them. You mentioned the one where it kind of made everything else feel not so bad with the Blankenship incompletion, bless his forearm. That looked pretty nasty, but yeah.
They don't wear metal spikes, so.
And I'll wrap it up with this. I was watching the game at a bar here in Austin, which I don't often do. My preference is to like watch it at home. So like I have, you know, I can hear, I can see. Although it is fun to go out and watch it with the crowd occasionally. When it went to overtime, the local coverage switched to the Cowboys because, you know, I'm in Texas and that was America's game of the week. And I guess the broadcast switched over. And so like we see the Eagles slowly get marched down the field. They give up the touchdown and they kick. So it's like, all right, we're going to overtime. And then I see the Cowboys kick off. So that was, I missed the whole offensive drive from the Commanders in the first half, or in the beginning of overtime. So I did miss that Blankenship incompletion, and that was nerve wracking, but they ended
up. So did you have to like pull it up on your phone or something, or did you have to leave?
They were able to figure out how to get it back on the TV. I did have it pulled up on my phone, but yeah, I didn't miss the Eagles portion, which was good.
All right. You got to do what you got to do.
Right.
All right. Let's get into the game on Sunday, 1:05 local time, 4:05 Eastern. Eagles go out to LA where they have not been since the Super Bowl year?
That sounds right.
Yeah. Because I guess the Rams would have been in Philly because they alternate, right?
I think that's right. I know the second most recent time out in LA was when Carson Wentz tore his ACL. So they've played there once since.
Because the Eagles haven't been to SoFi yet.
Yeah. This will be the first, I believe.
Interesting. Okay, so the Rams are 2-2, and just like the Eagles, they're coming off of an overtime victory. They beat the Colts. They were up, I think, 23-0 and let the Colts tie it and then ended up winning in overtime. As far as offense goes, Matthew Stafford, you know, been in the league a long time, not as good as he once was, had a hip injury last game, so most likely not 100%, but still expected to play, I believe.
Yeah, he hasn't missed any practice time, so it'll just keep him hobbled a bit, but again, he's been fully, he's been practicing.
Yeah, I mean, he's not much of a runner, so that's advantage to the Eagles for sure. In that regard, Cooper Kupp, I think, has been the big news of the week. He's expected to play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
or they're pushing him to play. Way. He had the hamstring injury. He was out on IR for a few weeks. So this is the first game back that he would be able to play in. He's expected to play. Rookie Puka Nacua has been their star receiver with Kupp's absence. So it'll be interesting to see how the offense changes with Kupp and Nacua in there.
Real quick on Nacua. And yeah, I suppose the duo of Kupp and Nacua. Nacua's got the second most receiving yards in the NFL right now, behind only Justin Jefferson. So he was a fifth rounder, wasn't really thought of as like a guy that would be a serious contributor, especially this early in the season, but he's had like a meteoric I guess entrance into the league. He had a lot of good momentum from the off season, it seems, or the preseason rather. With the Kupp injury, he's sort of slotted into that Kupp role as kind of being the chess piece McVay moves around in the offense. I even saw that I don't know if you know about this, but the past few years, Kupp and Stafford have had that breakfast club where they meet in the morning and they like basically game plan. And Nacua actually joined that breakfast club. So like he's already got that trust with Stafford. He had, I think, 35 targets in the first 2 weeks, which is just like unheard of. So like he was just getting a ridiculous amount of balls thrown his way. And those guys, they move around a lot. Like Kupp, he's moved all across the offense. He's really good in the slot. McVay uses a lot of pre-snap motion. We've seen that Nacua has been able to replicate that so far through the first month of the season. So now that they have two of them, it's like, man, that could be twice the madness. Where my mind goes with like pre-snap motions, like that's what killed the Eagles in the Super Bowl with Reed. You know, the Eagles don't see too much of that, I don't think, or at least they haven't throughout the first month of the year. It is quite glaring in comparison to the Eagles, who like never use pre-snap motion, or if they do, it's just like a guy kind of like moving or sliding like ever so slightly. We don't really see guys running like orbit across the quarterback. And it's just, I think it's interesting because it's like, I do remember a few years ago, the Eagles tried to incorporate some of that, but it didn't have like a meaningful impact. And it just felt like window dressing. And then they kind of said, all right, that's not us. But with McVay, that has such a prominent part of their offense, like getting guys moving, which reveals what the defense is anticipating. It kind of is like the first look at what the defensive play calling is before the quarterback snaps it. So with the new slot cornerback, presumably, there's probably going to be some mix-ups, I think, in that part of the game. So Sean Desai, I'm sure that's been a talking point this week, like making sure you understand your assignments, how you're passing guys off with that pre-snap movement. And my mind just goes back to the Super Bowl where they got burned twice in the red zone on some of those pre-snap things.
Yeah, I think the addition of Roby will be good with Bradberry and Slay on Kupp and Nacua. So that will alleviate a little bit of that concern. as far as the Eagles' defensive line and their offensive line, I think the advantage does go to the Eagles. They will be without Fletcher Cox, however, with dealing with back issues. So,
which is surprising because he's been like the Eagles' best defensive player so far. Yeah. It's like, wait, he's got a back problem?
Yeah, him and Jalen Carter. So it'll be up to the young guys for sure the whole game. You know, it was encouraging to see Sweat and Reddick get involved last week. So hopefully they'll be a force this week, especially against a top passing offense in the league. Tyler Higbee's been their tight end for a number of seasons now. League average, I think, not totally a guy you need to game plan a ton for, but he's, you know, like the Patriots, Hunter Henry, whoever they have, like, feel like he's that sort of tier tight end, so yeah. He could be a factor in the game.
Yeah, dependable, but he's not like a
yeah.
He doesn't present himself as like an X factor.
Right. So I think that the game will come down to how well the D-line does, because as good as Slay and Bradbury are, like, if Stafford doesn't have much pressure on him, they're going to get theirs all day long. It'll be hard to cover, especially with the safety group. You know, Blankenship's obviously been playing very well and flying around, but his safety partner is not always, you know, been the same player, and also none of those guys have been consistent, whether it's injury or poor play. So secondary linebackers have been solid, but the secondary has been the big defensive question mark through the year. I think that's just going to be kind of how it is. You hope that Slay and Bradbury can stay on the outside throughout the season to, you know, manage the deficiencies back there. But I think that's pretty much what it's going to come down to. The Rams don't really have a strong running back group as far as I know. I haven't really heard of any of these guys. Obviously
Kyron Williams has had a few good weeks. They trade away Cam Akers to the Vikings.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Kyron Williams, I believe he's a second year player. They like him as a pass catching back who can also like run decently. I don't think, given what the Eagles defensive line has been able to do to opposing running backs so far, like, you know, Brian Robinson, he had some good runs, but for the most part they've been able to stuff the run. So Kyron Williams, I think he presents more challenges catching passes out of the backfield than running. But yeah, he's, you know, second year player. So I feel like he's decent. He could be better than we know him today. I do want to mention Tutu Atwell. He's another receiver who's seen more snaps in the absence of Kupp. He's more of their downfield threat. Think of him as like their Quez Watkins. So he can find his way and potentially take the top off the defense, even though it seems like the Eagles are very content to drop quite deep. And then on their offensive line, they're experiencing some early season injuries. Their left tackle, Alaric Jackson, let's see, he has not practiced this week, I believe. He's got a hamstring injury. He has DNPs Wednesday and Thursday. Obviously, this is Friday morning, so we don't know what the Friday injury report says. But I would say if your starting left tackle hasn't practiced and it's Friday, I wouldn't count on him to be available. And last week, when he didn't play, their backup left tackle wasn't available, so they turned to their backup right guard, who he's named Joe Noteboom, and he also hasn't practiced this week with a groin injury. So their left tackle could be in a sore spot come Sunday. So they got two holes there because they could be down to their, I believe, third string left tackle and backup right guard. This is an offensive line that is kind of pedestrian to start with. So if they're down, at least one of their starters, potentially two, given the Eagles' strength at defensive line, even without Fletcher Cox, that is certainly a matchup where the Eagles can make some money, I think.
Yeah, and then the other side of the ball, obviously the Rams defense anchored by Aaron Donald. He's the biggest factor to account for, especially with Cam Jurgens out. Sua Peta seems to be the guy to slot in there. And I forget, which was it? He was high rated in run blocking and not in pass blocking, or was it the other way around? I remember he was, Peta. Yeah.
I don't know, but I would assume he's better as a run blocker.
Yeah. So that's what I think it was too. I remember he was not good and like bad in one of them and serviceable in the other. So as far as like pass blocking goes, four of your five top level O linemen are playing. And from that perspective, like maybe they have Aaron Donald pick on Sua Peta a little more, but I feel like that's a, correctable or manageable task. Cause he's going to disrupt the game in the way that he does anyway. Getting extra help on that right side would, not neutralize him, but help Jalen.
Yeah, a few things on Opeta. Sua Peta. Or Opeta or Opeta?
I don't know. I just Sua. Whatever come. Yeah, Sua. Yeah.
Okay. So after the game, I forget where I heard or saw this, but apparently Lane Johnson was like singing his praises in the remainder of the snaps that he played and filled in for Jurgens. So that's good to hear.
And he also came into the game because of an injury versus having a week of preparation. Right? So I think we saw, we saw that with Vitae years ago, and anyone that needs to fill in, it's much different to know you're playing and game plan and practice with the first team the whole week than to just come in. But he seemed to have played pretty well for just coming in.
Yeah, so I would say like I'm encouraged by Lane's review. Obviously they're stout, a week of preparation. He'll be between Jason Kelsey and Lane Johnson. Like, I feel like those two certainly provide a lot of help.
Yeah, and that was the same argument with Cam Jurgens coming in.
Yeah, any right guard, even when it was Brandon Brooks, was like, yeah, you couldn't be in a better spot, like, in any offensive line between those two. So Aaron Donald, like, still a generational talent, even if he's not putting up the gaudy numbers. And then a fun fact I also heard throughout the week, the Eagles are one of two remaining teams Aaron Donald does not have a sack against. So I believe
the other being the Rams.
I suppose. I don't know if I'm counting that one though. I think the stat may be factoring
teams that he hasn't played on.
Right. And the other. Man, I had another part. Now it's escaped me.
Well,
Aaron Donald, here it is. The Eagles have faced him four times. Each time he has, been unsuccessful in getting to the quarterback with a sack. So I do feel like the Eagles have had so far a successful track record in game planning and in preparation. I think that a lot of that goes to Stout, but I do feel like the Eagles are like prepared. Obviously it's a tough assignment for your backup right guard, but I think the other silver lining is that this is like a young upstart team for the most part. There's a lot of rookies, a lot of second year players. This is a team that many thought were a rebuilding team, like still competitive. Like it's not like a scorched earth rebuild team like the Cardinals, even though they're seemingly more competitive than most analysts projected. But that's all to say that, like, I'll be honest, I don't know if there's many other names your average NFL fan is familiar with on this defense outside of Donald. And that's not to say that they're like low quality players. I just think these are young, young players who haven't made a name for themselves yet. So I think so far they've been serviceable. They haven't been like bad per se. I think they've been like roughly league average, but I do think the Eagles offense, as long as they can keep Aaron Donald in check, that they should be able to move the ball relatively easily.
And yeah,
by their recent game against the Commanders, who have like a decent defense as well.
Right. They're 2-2. Their two wins had come in overtime against the Colts and a week one against the Seahawks. They put up 30 on the Seahawks, 29 on the Colts. That's including overtime. Their two losses were to San Francisco and Cincinnati. So, you know, those are two tough teams. Obviously, the Bengals haven't been playing very well this year, but, you know, with Joe Burrow and you know, the Super Bowl caliber team that they have, that's a you know, a tough game. They scored 16 against the Bengals and 23 against the Niners. I think the Niners game is probably a little more, you know, 23 points on a defense as similar to the Eagles. You know, that's kind of significant. They scored 17 in the first half and then six in the fourth quarter there. So, they got to an early start there that might be the case as the Eagles sort of, you know, adjust and that kind of thing. But yeah, to your point, not much going on the defense. They obviously gave up a ton of picks for, you know, Jalen Ramsey and other guys throughout the last few seasons. So they're and Matthew Stafford were big trades for them. So they seem to have hit on some young guys in later rounds and that kind of thing. So yeah, they're sort of a wild card type team. To your point, I couldn't tell you anyone else on the defense there, but I think from that perspective, it's hard to tell how they'll match up against the Eagles, but the Eagles do have advantage is in both lines, comparable, you know, receiver groups. I think the better quarterback, coaching's probably pretty even. And as far as defense goes, you know, I couldn't tell you about their linebackers or their secondary. So I'll just give it to the Eagles because to be Homer about it. So I think the Eagles definitely have more of the advantages, which has been the you know, the theme the last season and such. So yeah, it'll be a tough test. I think the biggest matchups are the Eagles defense and against their receivers, secondary versus their receivers. So we'll see there. As far as injuries for the Eagles, we mentioned Juergens and Fletcher Cox are out. Marlon Tuipulotu has a triceps situation, so he did not participate Wednesday and Thursday. Sidney Brown and Quez Watkins both returning to practice from being out last week. Sidney Brown has been limited. Quez Watkins has been a full participant. Justin Evans is full participant, and Britton Covey, dealing with a concussion, was limited yesterday. So we'll see with that. None of them totally, you know, game breaking. Fletcher Cox and Cam Juergens, obviously the biggest,
Yeah, getting
fires
the
there.
safeties back is important, I think. I think Edmonds has had decent plays here and there, but for the most part hasn't been. I'd say he's been like sub league average. So whether they turn back to Evans, he's been the starter when healthy, or if they want to try Sidney Brown and introduce him to the starting role, I think either of those would be upgrades. On Covey, I wouldn't anticipate him being ready for Sunday. No players so far in the NFL, at least as of last week, no player's been able to return within the week turnaround between a game where they got a concussion and the following. So I think the NFL has made that a bit of a steeper hill to climb. And probably rightfully so, given the nature of the injury. So, if he's not available, that's probably OZ's role. And given the return of Quez, that's another thing to watch. Like, does Quez get wide receiver three back, or is that more OZ, or is it a timeshare? Something to watch there. But yeah. I think we've hit the notable ones for the Rams. Their left tackle, their right guard. We mentioned Stafford has a hip thing, but he hasn't even been limited. He's been full. Kyren Williams, he also had a hip injury. He didn't practice Wednesday. He was limited Thursday, so we're starting running backs, not 100. Curious if that'll affect his snap share. And the big one's Cooper Kupp, which most indications are that he'll be activated and play Sunday, as far as there being no setbacks.
Are you starting Cooper Kupp?
I sure am.
All right.
Yeah, he'd be crazy not to. If you had him in fantasy and he hasn't played the first 4 weeks, you don't draft him in the first round to see if he's healthy. If he's activated, he's good to go.
The Eagles open up as 4.5 point favorites on the road. Sounds pretty good.
Yeah, that
Four and a
feels
half.
appropriate.
I like that. All right, let's get into predictions. I went first last week, so take it away.
All right. So, this will be similar to my Justin Jefferson and Hockenson prediction, which felt pretty gratuitous at the time, according to the lines. I don't have the lines for this one, so. Lack of accountability, I'll take it. But my first prediction here is Kupp and Nacua total for more than 200 yards, and in combination of that, Stafford eclipses 350 passing yards. Let's see here. I mentioned the thing about Nacua having the second most passing yards in the league right now, second to only Justin Jefferson. But as far as Stafford, just to go in a little bit more detail on him, I still think he's a really good quarterback, like certainly above average in the league. He can pick apart a soft defense, which last week the Eagles certainly look softer than they have in other weeks. He has the second most passing yards in the NFL right now through four games. And on the other side of things, the Eagles have allowed the sixth most passing yards. So I feel like that's a bad combination. Stafford, he likes to drop back. We mentioned Kyren Williams is hobbled. Maybe that means they're going to be more inclined to pass the ball more frequently. So I think the combination of all those things spells that Kupp and Nacua will both have their chances and will rack up quite a few yards.
Yeah, I have a similar prediction. If there's any doubt in Kupp returning, if he returns, that's part of the prediction. But in his return, I'll give him only one touchdown, but over 100 yards receiving. So will definitely be a factor. And I think as long as the defensive line does its job, it'll mitigate the breaking open of the game from the Rams receivers, or by the Rams receivers, I should say.
Okay. All right, my second one here. Dallas Goedert exceeds his season total yards thus far, which, if you were curious, 88. And in addition, he gets his first touchdown. So give me Goddard more than 88 yards and a touchdown.
I like that. I will keep it with the Eagles offense. The Jalen Hurts, A.J. Brown connection will continue. Give A.J. a touchdown and 150 yards receiving.
Okay. We didn't talk about the taunting penalty that ultimately opened the door for the ridiculous comeback. I think that he had such a good game, and it's tough to absolve him of that penalty. I did think the penalty was quite weak. Like, it felt like the refs were like, all right, he's about to taunt, let's see it. Like, it felt a little in a long list of bad calls, it felt like a one that was just like, all right, you're like, that didn't feel egregious, but nonetheless, I think he needs to like be a little bit more in control of his emotions, but if that prevents him from having these ridiculous like game breaking performances.
Yeah, on one hand, that's the kind of player he is. He does showboat a bit, and I think, you know,
he's so much of like a TO.
Yeah. There wouldn't have been the issue, I think, is like they wouldn't have been in the situation if the defense was playing better. But in a game where the defense isn't playing well, yeah, you can't like take that penalty.
Having a bad day.
So, you know, you don't need the touchdown as bad if you're up like two scores already. But because it was such a close game, and to the Eagles' credit, like, I wouldn't necessarily have expected with a minute and a half or whatever it was left that the Commanders were going to march down the field and score a touchdown. Like, yes, on paper, it's like you don't necessarily want to give your opponent that much time to get the ball back and possibly tie the game, but I do, to his credit, I wouldn't expect, like, in his mind, it's probably like, yeah, that put the game away. Like, I can understand that. And that's probably how you should react in both, like, we're a much better team, and also, like, trusting your defense to be able to stop Sam Howell and the Commanders from marching down the field and tying the game. But, you know, if it was the Chiefs, I don't think he would have necessarily taunted like that. But, yeah. You know,
two things on that. The first one more silly. I feel like the new point of view should be, if there's any suspicion you're going to get called for a taunting penalty, go all out with it. Don't hold anything back.
Yeah,
do the finger wagging.
It's still a 15-yard penalty either way, right?
Right. Right. There's no degrees. It's you got caught or you didn't. So
yeah.
Don't do anything mild, or don't do anything at all. The other thing, and we can keep this quick because I know we've already talked about the game, but the decision to take a deep shot there and open the door for the scenario that unfolded, you know, like, they could have kept, they were on there. I forget if they were on the outside of field goal territory or if they were already in, but like the decision to like go for a touchdown there, it feels ridiculous to say that you shouldn't be looking to score a touchdown there, because like, all right, what are the chances that they score and then the Commanders march down the field, tie it up, and that's exactly what happened.
Right. Yeah. I think from like a being smart perspective, like, and how good the running game is, you should have just run the clock out and didn't leave a doubt. But, you know, we move on, I suppose.
It's just it felt like a Madden. I was like, oh man, you really shot yourself in the foot with that touchdown there.
Yeah. That is funny.
All right. Third and final for me, with Cox out, gimme Milton Williams sees an elevated amount of snaps and notches his first sack of the year.
That's good. My third prediction's along the D-line as well, but with the edge rushers, I think the edge rushers with Fletcher Cox out will have a big game. Similar to last week, I'll give Reddick and Sweat a sack apiece.
Okay, I like it.
So we'll see both the thumbs down and the wiping the sweat away.
Yeah, those two are good celebrations, I feel like. And we got the Fletcher Cox, like, crawl.
The yeah, have, I mean, like, we lost the Hargrave karate kick. So hopefully Jalen Carter gets a good one, or Jordan Davis.
Mm-hmm, for sure. Alrighty. So you mentioned Eagles 4.5 point favorites. My player of the game. It's kind of jumps off of what you're just talking about, but I'm gonna go with Reddick. I feel like without Cox, we're gonna need to see one of the edge rushers step up. Josh Sweat, I think he's very capable of being that guy, but given Reddick's first sack of the season last year, him getting the cast off his thumb and him saying that he feels like he can finally get after it, I think he's going to have a game-breaking performance. I think he could have a multi-sack game. He could potentially force a fumble. And I think given what this Rams offense is capable of doing as far as passing the ball, they're going to need, like, a turnover. Last game, there was zero turnovers in the whole game, I believe. So I do think the Eagles will need to get a big defensive play in. Give me Reddick.
Yeah, you mentioned it with one of your predictions. My player of the game is going to be Dallas Goedert. It's about time he gets involved. And with my AJ Brown prediction, I guess I'm going to have to top that. And I think a prediction saying, you know, he's going to be reliable and be a third down converting machine is a little tame. So let's give Dallas Goedert 100 yards receiving and 2 touchdowns. And he'll be reliable on third down.
All right. The whole thing.
Yep.
All right. Score prediction. I do have the Eagles winning. I don't have them covering. I think that this will be a close game. Give me Eagles 29, Rams 27.
The 2-point win.
2 point.
Who has the ball as time expires?
Yeah, that's what I don't want to answer. I feel like it could be the Rams. I feel like this could be the Eagles winning on like a field goal going like wide left.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's mine.
I too have them not covering but winning. I have a bit of a higher scoring affair, not too much, but Eagles 35, Rams 31. So similar score from last week. But the Eagles are 1 point better.
All right. So we both have the Eagles
giving up a lot of points,
continuing their undefeated start to the year. Another great game to watch this week, the 49ers playing the Cowboys. That'll certainly tell us a lot about what we need to know as far as the top of the NFC. I know, I'll be watching that game.
Yeah, I got it mixed up, and I thought the Phillies game two was going to be Sunday, but it's not till Monday.
Right.
So yeah. I was expecting Eagles, because the Eagles played that Thursday night game in Houston during a Phillies playoff game. Yeah. That might have been a World Series game.
It was, because yeah. I was at a concert. It was Phillies playing in the World Series, Eagles playing the Texans, which I wasn't that upset about. Wasn't it? I feel like that was Thursday night football, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was Thursday night, yeah.
And I was at a concert. I was watching Mount Joy. It was, you know, nice. from the area. So it was like a lot of Philliness happening. And likewise,
it's the worst when you can't watch.
Yeah. Unfortunately, that'll be me this weekend. I'll actually be at ACL, the music festival here in Austin. So I will be missing the Phillies on Saturday, the Eagles on Sunday, but I'll be following along.
You got to do it. It's better when it's earlier, both in the playoffs and the season.
Right.
So, all right. Well, we'll be back next week to review this game and preview the next. I believe they go to the Meadowlands to face the New York Jets following the Rams game. So we'll be back and go Phillies, go Birds. For Mike, I'm Ian. Thanks for listening.